Well, so go ahead and turn to Revelation chapter 21. Revelation chapter 21. We're in a new series now as we took an entire year to go through the book of Romans. We're going to spend the next 6 weeks answering some tough questions. And so these are some questions that you may be wondering about. Some of them are easy to answer and like easy to ask. Others, as we'll get along, are a little bit more uncomfortable to ask. But we're going to start off a little bit easier to ask today. And the question today is, what is heaven like? What is heaven like? And so to start out by explaining, we're going to go back to 2018. And I saw this article in late 2018, and it was titled, Top 10 Fake News by Facebook Engagement. So back then, it was there's a lot of fake news stories that were going on. And so this one company looked at all the different engagements in the fake news on Facebook and ranked them on the top 10. So I'm going to talk about just a couple of the ones that stood out to me. Here's number 8 here. We'll put that on the screen, hopefully. So North Korea will open its doors to Christianity. Fake news. That is 760,000 people clicked on that link there. Number 7, I thought this one was funny. Two altar boys arrested for putting weed in the censor burner. That would make for quite the service, wouldn't it? Number 5, this is going back to, again, 2018 during presidency of Donald Trump. Donald Trump ends school shootings by banning schools. There you go. Number 4, Michael Jordan resigns from board at Nike, takes Air Jordans with him. 911,000 clicked on that. And the number 1 here, with 2.3 million clicks, lottery winner arrested for dumping $200,000 of manure on ex-boss's lawn. Fake news right there. 2.3 million people. Now, I think we would agree 4 years later that fake news is still everywhere, isn't it? And there's a lot of fake news out there about heaven as well. And let me give you some examples of things that came to my mind as I thought about things that we believe or hear or see on TV about heaven that I would consider fake news. So first is that heaven is just in the clouds, that it's in the fluffy, you can just bounce from cloud to cloud. Another one here, someone is going to be playing a harp up in heaven. Now, no offense to those who are harp players out there, but don't think that harps are going to be real instrumental in heaven. Number 3 here, that there's going to be these chubby babies with wings and arrows floating around here. Fake news, but yet what do we see when we often hear in our culture here about heaven? Number 4, this is a big one here, that heaven is going to be boring. It's going to be boring. And people think, oh, heaven, I don't want to go there because there's going to be nothing to do, which leads to the last fake news item, that it's just going to be a never-ending worship service, like singing the same song over and over again. I could sing of your love forever. And then you're like, oh, great. And then it goes on and on and on and forever. Those are fake news. Fake news about heaven. But today, I want us to look at a passage that's going to give us some correct information about heaven. So instead of reading fake news about things on Facebook, we're going to look at God's revelation and get some real news, some real information about it. So again, Revelation chapter 21. And in this chapter, God has a lot to say about what heaven's going to be like. And hopefully you're going to hear, going to get a glimpse of the awesomeness, if that is even a word there, of things to come. Now, before we go into the passage, I want to just describe Revelation a little bit, because this is a tough book to understand. Let me give you just a couple of descriptions of it. First of all, Revelation is a vision. So it's a vision given by God to John. Now, we don't know which John. We assume it's John the disciple, but he doesn't make it clear here. But it's from God to John. And a vision is almost like a dream while being awake, but it's given by God to John. But second, it's also a letter. So Revelation is written from John with this vision to seven churches. But third, it's a prophecy. And so a prophecy, it's God's word spoken through a prophet of things to come. And this leads to the last part here, and this is perhaps what makes it the most difficult to understand, is that the genre of Revelation is that it is considered apocalyptic literature. That's quite the word, isn't it? Apocalyptic literature. And here's a very short description, one sentence description of what apocalyptic literature is. And so on the next slide there, apocalyptic literature is a specific form of prophecy largely involving symbols and imagery and predicting disaster and destruction. And so the genre is unique in that it uses a lot of symbolic language to describe what is to come. And so, listen, Revelation is not meant to be a word-for-word code book of what's to happen in the future. It's talking about what's to happen in the future, but it describes it in a very symbolic way. And so with that in mind, when we get to Revelation chapter 21, we're going to get some ideas, some big picture items about what heaven is like. But we shouldn't use Revelation to get an idea about what the specifics, like the minute details of heaven. And when you see these descriptions, go ahead and drag them out and say, oh, you know, the floor is going to be gold. Well, that's most likely that is symbolic for something else, for it to be amazing and so on. And so we're going to get some big picture items about what heaven's like. We're not going to get the specific items from here. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's go ahead and go into our passage, and we're going to just work our way through the first eight verses, and we're going to see a little bit about what heaven is like from these eight verses. So verse one. John writes, "Then I saw a new heaven and new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more." So here's the first thing that we see about heaven. What is heaven like? That there will be a new heaven and earth. A new heaven and earth. So to understand this, we're going to have to go on again on a small tangent to talk about what happens after a person dies before Jesus returns. So what happens, say, when a family member, a deceased family member passed away? So when someone dies, their body and their spirit separate. The body goes down into the ground, but the spirit goes up to be with God in heaven if they've put their faith in Jesus Christ, or down into hell if they have not put their faith in Jesus Christ. But those heaven and hells are just really a temporary residence waiting for Jesus to return. Listen to what Paul says in 1 Thessalonians, because once Jesus returns, it is what I call moving day. Moving day. Paul writes, "But we do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about those who are fallen, who are asleep, who have passed away or dead, that you may not grieve as others do who have no hope. For since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so, through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep. For this we declare to you by the word of the Lord, that we who are alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord, will not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a cry of command, and the voice of an archangel, and with the sound of the trumpet, and the dead in Christ will rise first. And then those who are alive, who are left, will be caught up together with them in the clouds and meet the Lord in the air. And so we will always be with the Lord. So the context of that verse, or those verses, is that at some point Paul must have been asked, what happens when Jesus returns to those who are already dead? Because if Jesus returns and he comes to bring those with him who believe in him, then those that were there are good, but what about those who have passed away already? And so Paul says that the alive, meaning that when Jesus returns, the alive are going to be brought up with Jesus. But before that, when Jesus returns, before that, the dead are going to be risen again. And so when Jesus returns, there's going to be this massive resurrection day here on this earth. And God will return the spirits that are in holding status right now, hanging out with God in sort of the temporary heaven. He will return them to their bodies, and then those bodies will go up to be with Jesus. Now you may ask, what happens if they're in the grave 6 feet under? You know, are they going to wake up in the grave, in the casket? And we're not told what's going to happen. But I suspect that if God has the power to raise someone from the dead, he can move them to the right spot. Amen? All right, so I'll leave it at that. But someone else may ask, what about the person who has disintegrated? You know, they've been dead for so long that their body is just sort of in the dust now, the ground. And to answer that, let's think back to the very first person that was created, Adam. And where did Adam come out of? God created him out of the dust of the ground. And so God, in his infinite wisdom and knowledge and ability, can go in and pull out the dust particles that were once the person and form them back together into you who are dead now, and then bring you back, rise you back again. And so when that happens then, he'll bring the dead, he'll raise them again, bring them back, and then the alive, who are alive at that point, will then be brought up with him. And then that's when it's time for a little, what I might call a little remodeling project. And so the heaven that, again, that our deceased family members are in, that our deceased loved ones are in, is not their final home. The current heaven is the temporary heaven that's waiting for the new home. So why does it need a new home? And the answer is simply upgrades. Upgrades. Listen to 1 Peter 3:10. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief. The heaven will disappear with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed by fire, and the earth and everything done in it will be laid bare. And so when Christ returns and judges all people, the earth is going to be laid bare. It's going to be burned up because something better is coming behind it. Now, how many of you used to like to watch that show, Fixer Upper? It's the same story every time, isn't it? Someone in Texas has an ugly home. And then they bring in the experts, this nice couple who gives some ideas. They spend some money. They upgrade everything. First, there's a mess, but then there's the big reveal at the end, and it's all of a sudden a beautiful home. That's Fixer Upper right there. But when Jesus returns, there is going to be a Fixer Upper heaven and earth edition where Jesus and where God is going to take the heavens and earth, and he is going to redo it into something amazing. And that leads now to the next verse, verse 2. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. So when the new heaven and earth are established, there's going to be this new Jerusalem that comes down from the clouds to the earth there. But the second part of that verse is what I believe is the most important there. He says, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And so this is pointing towards the marriage between Christ and his people. And so the second thing that we must see about heaven is that heaven will include marriage with Christ. Marriage with Christ. So earthly marriages, the ones that we have now, are designed by God to give us a picture, just a picture of what is to come in heaven. Listen to what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Sounds like a good description of marriage, right? But then he says, the mystery is profound, and I am saying that it refers to Christ and the church. And the church. And who makes up the church? Not the building here, but us. All of us here. Now, there's a lot in those verses, but to keep things simple, what he's getting at is that the awesome parts of marriage show us what it will be like to be with Jesus in heaven. The awesome parts of marriage show us just what it's going to be like to be with Jesus in heaven. So for those that are married, that those feelings that you had on the day of your wedding, where she walked down the aisle, or where you walked down the aisle and you saw him standing there all dapper at the front of the church there. And that feeling, that expectation, that excitement, that joy, that happiness that you had, that is a taste of what heaven's going to be like. A taste of what heaven's going to be like. So all of that then leads us to the next few verses, or next verse here. So continuing the same idea, verse 3, and I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. And he will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. So what we see here is that heaven will be a place of intimacy with God. Intimacy, closeness with God. That word there that's used, he says he will dwell with them. That's the word that literally means tabernacle. And the same word is used in the Old Testament when God came with to live with the Israelites in the desert in a tabernacle. And so God tabernacled with them as they were leaving Egypt and going towards the Promised Land, or wandering around in the desert. God was with his people. But at that point, when he lived with them in that tabernacle, there were a lot of rules to be near God. First of all, most people couldn't even get near the tabernacle. And then the ones that could, there's one person could go into the tabernacle once a year. And to do that, they had to go through this whole process, and the sacrifices had to be made because, listen, there is this holy God living with sinful people. So God was with his people in the desert, but there was still this separation. There was still this lack of intimacy, even though there was some closeness. But thanks to what Jesus Christ did for us on the cross, God is not going to just bring us up into heaven and let us live in the outskirts of it. He's going to bring us in, and we are going to live with him. And so, again, that word there, dwell, is he's going to tabernacle, same word there, he's going to tabernacle with us. We are going to be his people, and there is going to be intimacy between us and him. And so with that intimacy comes some amazing benefits. So let's go on now to the next verse and a half. And he will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore. For the former things have passed away. And he who was seated on the throne said, behold, I am making all things new. So not only is there going to be unprecedented intimacy with God, but heaven is going to be a place where everything will be made right again. So in the Garden of Eden, going back to the very beginning, everything was right in the Garden of Eden. But then Adam and Eve sinned, things got messed up and brought in with them death and sin, and things have never been the same since then. But when Jesus returns, that is all going to change. He says that he is making all things new. And that word there in Greek for new means fresh, better, superior, unworn. So it's not just a new version of the messed up stuff. It's a new version, and it is fresh and new and better and unmessed up. So it's a reversal of all that was messed up at the beginning. Now, let me point out two things there in this passage here that he points out. No more death. No more death. So no more decaying of bodies while we're alive. The disease is gone and physical pain is gone. And so many of us live with chronic health conditions, and the older that we get, the more difficult things get, because that's just a normal part of life, isn't it? That life as we get older gets older and harder and more difficult in our bodies. I saw this story is back in 2009. There is this Brazilian architect, this famous guy, that turned 102. And he was asked about his birthday, and he had this to say about turning 102. Turning 102 is bleep, and there is nothing to commemorate. Now, why would he say that? Because getting old is not fun, is it? But in heaven, that is going to be reversed. All things will be made new. Death is gone, and pain is gone as well. But second, we also see that there's going to be no more crying, no more mourning. Now, we've been crying since the day of our birth, haven't we? We've been crying as babies. We cry as kids. And as we get older, some of us start to hold in those tears a little bit more than others. But they still come at times, don't they? Now, I don't consider myself a big crier, but you should see me when I'm on my own watching or reading stories that really get to me, like those rescue stories. There's just a couple of months ago, I was reading this story about this woman that was kidnapped by some terrorists in Africa. And she was there for a couple of months. And then at the end of the story, these Navy SEALs come in and rescue her and kill all the bad guys. And there I was in bed. It was probably 2 a.m. And my wife is sleeping next to me. And I'm in bed. I'm breaking down right there as I watch that. Trying not to wake up my wife. When I was younger, and try not to cry too much, but again, these stories. And I remember watching Ernest Goes to Camp. And Ernest got picked on. And all of his friends abandoned him. And there he was holding his turtle, and then his turtle bit him on his nose. And he starts singing, "Gee, I'm glad it's raining, because nobody can see the teardrops in my eyes." And I'm there watching this movie with my parents at the foot of the bed, 12 years old, tears coming down my eyes, hoping that my big brother doesn't see me cry. Now, I say those, they really happen, but I say those in jest. But listen, crying happens, doesn't it? Tears come as adults. And I've been here a little over 5 years now, and I've seen a lot of tears here at Island Pond, as people have grieved the loss of children, the loss of loved ones, as people have grieved family issues, health problems, just issues going on in life and complications and all these things, because the world is tough, isn't it? Life is difficult. even with Jesus, in the hope of Jesus, we live in sort of that intermediary place where life can still be difficult. And yet one day, all of that difficulty, all those tears, all that mourning, it's going to be gone. It's going to be gone. So here's the bottom line. I could give you, or I'm not going to give you a lot of details from this passage about heaven, but heaven will be more happy and will have more joy than any place now here on earth. Disneyland is known as the, quote, happiest place on earth, but newsflash, I've been to Disney World. There's still a lot of tears going on at Disney. Heaven is going to be the happiest place in heaven and earth. Let's go on now to the next part here. The second part of verse 5. I'm going to go down to verse 8. And he said, write these down, for these words are trustworthy and true. And he said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give from the spring of the water of life without payment. The one who conquers will have this heritage, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. But as for the cowardly and the faithless and detestable and the murderers and the sexual immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. So as amazing as heaven is going to be, heaven will not include everyone. Notice that he says, for the one who conquers. Heaven's going to be for the one who conquers. So what is he saying there? Does it mean you have to be strong and be ready, like, you know, like a video game there? You got to beat the bad guys and win at the end, and then you get to go to heaven. You have to be good enough and not do all those things that he mentioned. Well, let's think about this. The word conquer also means overcome. So it's the same word. And listen to what Jesus said in John 16:33. But take courage. I have overcome, or you could use the word conquered, the world. Or in 1 John 5. For everyone who has been born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is it that overcomes the world except the one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? So who is it that is the conqueror here? Who overcomes? Those who put their faith in Jesus Christ. So you don't have to be the biggest. You don't have to be the strongest. You don't have to be the one who sins the least. You have to put your faith in Jesus Christ. And if you have, then you have overcome. I was thinking about how to illustrate this to you all. And I'm going to do this by giving out some Dunkin' Donuts. And so I'm going to invite Josh and Zach to come on up here, and we're going to do just a little thing here. They came to me this morning and were like, Pastor Kyle, we want to be in your next sermon illustration. Right? Is that how it worked here? All right, so you like donuts, right?
Sure.
Okay, come on up here.
Okay.
We will give you these donuts. It has, I believe, 11 donuts in it because I gave one to my son this morning. So we're down to 11, but the rest are yours. But to do that, you're going to have to accomplish a task. It's a pretty easy task here. We're going to have three boxes, and all you have to do is stack them on top of each other. Anyway, so any way that you stack them, if they're on top, then you have accomplished it. and you will get the donuts. I feel like I have someone here in front of me here. Can you do that?
I think so.
Okay. All right, so we're going to move this just a little bit out of the way here. I didn't mention, though, that I'm going to have your brother tie you up before you do that. So if you can do it rather quickly, but just give him a good tie. Don't.
Sadly, this is not the first time this has happened.
Oh, yeah. Just not the neck.
Yeah, go for the neck.
Okay. Yeah, tie him up good. Don't forget the feet as well. Now, on top of that, we don't want you to see either. So, you mind if I don't want to mess up your hair this morning? You mind? Okay.
It's as good as it's gonna be.
There you go.
Okay.
So, are you ready? Go ahead and get to the boxes there.
That's all I got. I don't even. Where's the?
Start swinging real hard.
So, is it safe to say that you're not going to be able to do it very easily? Okay. Would you all agree with him as well? Okay. We'll take this off here. What if though? You had your brother do it for you.
Yeah.
Can you go ahead and stack them for him?
For a donut.
Nope. Keeping all of you're killing my little example here, but all right, go ahead and stack them. Now here's what I'm getting at here. I guess once he's done there, you can go ahead and free him here. Let's give him a hand. Oh, and you can take those with you as well here. Oh, hey, Josh, do you mind putting those down also? Here's what I'm getting at here. He would not have been able to do that, at least very easily, but the instructions were that he just needed to get those three boxes stacked. So he couldn't do it, but he had a friend, or in this case, brother, who could. Now, the same is true when it comes to getting to heaven. You cannot get to heaven on your own. But if only you had a friend who could help you. What a friend we have in Jesus, yes! And Jesus is our friend, and he can help us. And he can help us do what we can't do. He can help us do the things that we cannot accomplish on our own, because through our sinfulness, through our humanness, through our inabilities, we cannot get ourselves to heaven. But Jesus can get us there. He can do it. And so let's not put our faith in our abilities here. Let's put our faith in Jesus Christ. And so as I start to wrap up now, I want to give just one takeaway to think about now. With all that we know about heaven, what should we do with it? With all that we know, and we should not be silent. We should not be silent. So we've been given this amazing news about heaven, that one day everything is going to be made right again. And that only those who know Jesus are going to be going there. And so, should we keep silent about it? Here's a picture of our cruise that we went on this past week. We had a good time. And those that come to me every once in a while and ask me, do you like cruising? And I say, yes, I love going on cruises. And I'll start talking about my favorite parts here. And we've been on a number. This is our first time with our kids, but we've been on a number of them. And yet the reality is that Royal Caribbean will not get me to heaven. They would try, but they would charge me an enormous amount to do it. They can't extend anyone's life. It's not going to make a way for people to get to eternal life. And so why is it? Why is it that sometimes I'm more excited to talk about Royal Caribbean cruises than about Jesus Christ? Why is it that for some of us, we're more excited to talk about our favorite sports team than what Jesus has done for us and has made a way for us to get to heaven? Why is it that it's easier for us to sometimes talk about some of our favorite TV shows than about Jesus? It shouldn't be like that, should it? For those that have the hope of heaven inside of us. And sometimes we think, I don't want to offend anyone. And that's sort of the culture that we live in now. But really, in the name of offense, we don't want people to go to heaven? Like, are we not wanting to do that in the name of offense? A while back, I read a story about the USS Indianapolis. It's a World War II ship that was sunk near the end of the war. And one of the stories near the end that stands out to me is about at that point, so the ship had sunk and hundreds of sailors were in the water for days waiting for rescue that no one knew they were in the water. And so 4 days in, people were starting to go crazy. So some of the sailors that had been in life rafts for 4 days were wanting so thirsty that they would start drinking the salt water, which would eventually kill them. Some of them would start to envision or start to have these visions of or these seeing like root beer floats off in the distance. And so they would dive into the water and chase after them. And in one story, there's these two people on a raft, these friends. And this one guy starts hallucinating. And he sees something and he wants to go and get it. And so he starts trying to dive into the water. And the friend holds on to him and starts slapping him. Slap, slap, slap. Now, in that moment, was the friend concerned about offending the other friend? No, he was concerned about saving his life. And may we have the same attitude when it comes to sharing our faith with others. Now listen, we're told to do it wisely, seasoned with salt. We're told to be peacemakers, so I'm not advocating slapping people here. We're told there to do it with love. But may we never hold back simply because we're afraid it's going to offend someone or it's going to embarrass us. Let's not be a people who sit by and watch as our neighbors, as our friends, as our family members continue on in their life and end up in the direction of hell. May that not be us. And so to wrap this up, I'm going to give you the entire message in one sentence. And that is this: that heaven is going to be awesome, so let's tell people about it. Let's tell people about it. It's going to be awesome. I can't give you every single detail, but it is going to be awesome. So let's go and tell people about it. Let's spend a moment now in prayer.